the drive up Spring Mountain is impressive on its own. And then you arrive at the top, around 2,100 feet, where the divide of Napa and Sonoma counties can be found. And that's where you find Pride Mountain Winery. This special edition of our podcast was made more relevant by Suzanne Pride Bryan's fantastic hospitality, not only by giving me her time for this interview, but taking me for a tour of the most beautiful property that can be found between Napa and Sonoma. I'm here with Suzanne Pride Bryan at Pride Mountain.
That's right.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too, Ray. Thank you.
Well, first things first, thanks very much for making the time for me. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. I'm proud to show people the winery up here.
I bet you are. Which brings me to my first question. As I was, we were going to meet in a different room, and as I walked by, there's this map on the wall with your vineyards. I only got a glance of it. So I guess first question is, how many acres do you have? And second of all, tell me a little bit about that map.
Well, we have 240 acres up here at Historic Summit Ranch, but we have 86 planted to vine, and we have a whole bunch of different varietals that we grow up here at 2,100 feet above the Napa and Sonoma valleys. The Napa-Sonoma County line goes down the middle of our crush pad, and the map on the wall that you're referencing is actually in what we call our dirt museum in the tasting room. My brother is a geophysicist, in addition to being our general manager up here at Pride Mountain Vineyards, my brother Steve Pride. And we have at least five different soil types up here on the top of the mountain. So we have that map that shows where each varietal is grown on the property and what kind of soil it's planted in.
What specifically are you growing on those?
Well, we grow a little bit of everything. We grow Cabernet Sauvignon, we grow Merlot, Cabernet Franc, a little bit of Sangiovese, Chardonnay, Viognier, Syrah, the noble varietals, and we vinify each of them separately in our cave. So it's quite a bit to keep track of, but we're very careful about that whole process.
Let's talk about the Sangiovese.
Oh, the Sangiovese.
Are you bottling that or using it for a blended grape?
We bottle it and we don't make very much of it. I think we only have two vine rows planted. And so we have to bottle it in 500 milliliter bottles because we don't even make enough to put them in 750 milliliter bottles. So it's something that's only available here at the winery. It's very rare. It's lovely, but even we don't get to drink that much of it.
So let's talk about this division and your crush pad and then the two counties. What the heck? How do you keep this together? How do you do this in terms of, I know you told me you have two sets of legal books.
Right. Well, for whatever reason, grapes have been grown up here for 140 years, and we have the ruins of an old winery called Summit Winery dating back to 1890. Grapes have been grown here since 1869, but this winery was here in 1890. I'm not sure when the county line was put in between Napa and Sonoma, but for whatever reason, they didn't capture all of this old ranch in either Sonoma or Napa. So the county line actually goes down the middle of the property. We're at the very top of Spring Mountain on the Napa side. We are at 2,100 feet, and the definition of the county line is if you're a drop of rain water falling on this ranch, if you fall on one side, you're going to go down and end up in the Napa River and the San Francisco Bay, and if you are a drop of rain on the other side of the ridge, you're going to end up in Marquess Creek and the Pacific Ocean. We really are at the very top of this mountain, and the Napa-Sonoma County line, as it all panned out, goes down the middle of our crush pad. When we built the winery, that's how it all evolved. And so, yes, we have our equipment on wheels, and we literally are crushing Napa fruit on the Napa side and then unplugging the machinery and rolling it across and crushing Sonoma fruit on the Sonoma side. And all of this is about 20 feet apart. So it's kind of interesting. Keeps things fun up here. Our winemaker, Sally Johnson, has a really great time dealing with all of this. Also, our caves that we have up here are part in Napa and part in Sonoma. And so we keep track of all of our barrels according to its Napa or Sonoma appellation.
That's absolutely nuts.
I mean, it is.
Just from a running a business perspective. I mean, is it really, literally, you are moving this back and forth?
We are doing that, and we have two bonded wineries up here as a result of this. We have a Napa winery and a Sonoma winery. Again, they're about 20 feet apart up here at the tasting room for those people who have visited up here. And because we have two bonded wineries, we cannot technically say that we are estate produced, although we are estate produced. We grow all of our fruit with the exception of a little Chardonnay at the ranch. And there's one thing that I'm very proud of, if you'll allow me just a little moment, and that is Robert Parker, who, of course, is very famous for his opinions on wine, did a book several years ago on what he considers to be the world's great wine estates. And he looked at, you know, how many wineries are there in the world, 14,000 wineries or some huge number around the world. And he chose 156 wineries from around the world, which he considers to be the world's best wine estates. And we've felt very fortunate that he included us in that number. So while we can't say we're a state produced, Mr. Parker said we're a state produced, so that's okay with me. And our label has to show the different percentages. So our Merlot might say, you know, 60% Sonoma, 40% Napa. And I'm always fearful that people around the country will look at that and say, oh, they buy fruit from around, you know, the valleys or whatever. We don't. We grow all of our fruit up here. So I had to create a back label that says one ranch, two counties to help clarify our unique story up here.
My experience on this trip has been the work in the winery, how incredibly difficult things are, complicated, and above all else, expensive. Does this idea of this division with the counties add that much more to your overhead and what you do day to day? Does it make it that much more complicated?
Well, as far as, you know, adding to our overhead, there's the old joke way back when my parents started this winery in 1989, and there was not a winery building here at that time other than the ruins of the old winery from 1890, which was burned during Prohibition and is just a shell of itself. So they wanted to build a winery. So they applied to Napa County first, and Napa said, well, you know, this is going to be difficult, and you have Sonoma fruit. You're going to have to probably truck it down the mountain, your Sonoma fruit, and crush that down in Sonoma County. And Dad said, well, why would we do that? And so one of the planning commissioners in Napa County said, well, why don't you just build two wineries? And so Dad said, well, how many millions of dollars do you have, ma'am? You know, you're asking me to do something quite difficult. The long and the short of it is that we have tanks, stainless steel tanks that are on the Napa side, and then we have our building here on the Sonoma side. And so hence our two bonded wineries. You know, one has a roof over it, the other one doesn't. We're a humble, small little farm up here with a humble little production facility up here. So no, it doesn't really add that much to our bottom line, other than we do have to deal with taxes for both counties and all that kind of stuff. But that's okay. That's okay. Makes everybody happy.
At this point, I'm going to break into the interview. During my tour of the property, I was able to record Suzanne while we walked through the caves, as well as along the top of Spring Mountain.
Well, here we are in the caves at Pride Mountain Vineyards, and we've got 1,700 linear feet of caves here. We can have about 2,400 barrels, which can be stacked three high, but we only stack them two high. And depending what Mother Nature gives us every harvest, you know, we can make up to 20,000 cases, but we never make more than 16,000 a year total production.
I see the candles on the barrels. Is that for effect, or?
Yes. We did have a guest ask if it contributed to the terroir, but no, it doesn't. It's just for effect. That's part of our ambiance up here. So I just wanted to bring you in here, Ray, to show you our caves. The caves were begun in 1999 and completed in 2001. We had to deviate from our original plan here, floor plan of the caves, because we kept running into these humongous boulders under the earth here. But the temperature is constant in here. It's a good way to store the wine, much more cost effective in the long run than building a warehouse and trying to air condition it.
Okay, we're out in the car with Suzanne, and I'm going to let her take it from here. Tell us where we're at, and sounds like we have a ghost story.
Well, Historic Summit Ranch is supposedly haunted. It is on the Historic Ghost Winery Tours. Years ago, before we had our horses and our barn up here, I was walking up here at the corner of what we call the avenue at the top of the mountain, and it was a quiet Sunday. Nobody was up here. I was thinking, what am I going to make for dinner? And behind me, I heard the plodding of hoofs and the rattles of chains and like a big wagon with a four pair, you know, a big team of horses was coming. And I turned around to say, oh my goodness, someone's up here with horses. And of course, there was nothing there. So I always call this corner here Haunted Bridal Corner. And ultimately, it's where we just happened coincidentally to build our barn for our Belgians that we have up here. They pull a wagon for guests sometimes, but they're getting old. And so they're just mostly our boys are in a happy retirement up here. We have three Belgian horses, and they each weigh 2,000 pounds. So they're our big babies.
They must take a heck of a lot of work.
They do. And we have one dedicated man up here that just tends to the horses. The baby, who really is a baby, he's just 5 years old. Our Mario here, who tends to the horses, has taught him to dance. And so when we have our harvest party and we have the mariachi band up here, his name is Surf. The horse's name is Surf. And he comes out in his finest silver tack. And Mario is wearing his finest black cowboy outfit with silver trimming. And they dance with the mariachi band. It's quite a sight to see.
I gotta believe that. How long do they normally live?
Oh, I think Belgians, I don't know, but I think they can live 20, 25 years. The older brothers are, they are brothers, that one's 17 and one's 18. And they actually started in Cleveland pulling horse rides around a park. And we rescued them, and they're having a nice retirement up here at Pride Mountain Vineyards.
Just out of curiosity, have you ever had any other experience like that up here before?
Well, yes. I'm going to take you next down to the old winery ruins. And on a dark night, walking home from my parents' house up here, when we were staying at the guest house, my husband and I actually heard barrels rolling in this old ruin of a winery, which no longer has any floors, nor does it have a roof. But we heard wine barrels rolling on the floor, like people were rolling them and working. It was pretty neat.
And back to complete the interview. What makes Pride different? Why are you, like, I don't know if I'd say in cult or boutique or what word you'd want to use, but what makes you a popular wine other than you simply make great wine?
And thank you for saying that, Ray. Well, there's a couple of different answers to that question. First of all, we, although we're way up at the top of Spring Mountain on the Napa side from St. Helena, or up an equally winding road from the Santa Rosa side in Sonoma County, there's something to see when you get up here. When you're up here, we've got the ruins of the old winery, we've got caves, we have a wonderful tasting room, great staff. The property's beautiful, and if you know where you're looking as you're standing around on the hills up here, you can actually see five different counties on a clear day. And so that's a lot of fun. A lot of people really view this as a special place. We've had, it's kind of funny, we've had obviously a lot of people get engaged up here. We've had people secretly get married up here, although we don't technically do weddings up here. But we've actually had someone, I've had someone come up to me and tell me at a tasting that they conceived their child in our vineyard, which was pretty funny. We've sadly had a couple people sprinkle their loved ones' ashes up here. So a lot of people really view this as kind of a home, kind of a destination, kind of a neat place to visit. And they all take away their special memories. And they share that with their friends. So I think that's one reason Pride is popular. The other thing that's pretty special is, and our winemakers, we've had three winemakers over our 20-year history, and all of our winemakers have been really respectful of the fact that the fruit from Pride Mountain Vineyards up here, these vines at this elevation in these different soils grow really well. And the winemakers respect the fruit, and they try to let the fruit express itself in the different varieties of wine that we make up here. And so we don't play a lot of games with our winemaking. It's pretty straightforward. And like any good kind of cooking or winemaking or anything, it all comes down to the ingredients that you start with. And that's another thing Mr. Parker said, is the quality of the fruit from Pride is really exceptional. So we feel very blessed about the quality of our fruit. And of course, we try to farm it in such a way that we really bring out the best that these vines can produce.
Are you, being that you're this high, so you're above the fog line, right, then? Or?
Yes. Well, we have two kinds of fog that hit us up here on the mountain. Like everything else, nothing's quite an easy answer. We either have the Pacific fog coming from the Pacific Ocean to the west of us, which basically is a cloud, and we'll be sitting up here in a cloud. But more commonly than that, we have the fog that comes up from the bay, the San Francisco Bay, comes up the Napa Valley, and we will be up above the clouds then. And it's beautiful to be up here on a sunny morning and look down and see a whole white lake of clouds down in the Napa Valley. It's just really spectacular.
How many people do you employ, too? I want to ask you that.
Well, we have a lot of employees for a winery of our size. We have 45 employees, and 14 of them are permanent vineyard crew. And these guys are with us all year round. They're on our benefit plan. They're our part of our family. And we don't employ any seasonal workers. They're our guys and our tasting room crew. We have a pretty big tasting room crew, but that's because we believe very much in customer service, and we want every visitor up here to have a very unique experience, one-on-one, personalized to them, their questions, their level of interest. None of our tasting room people give a canned speech or just pour wine and walk away. Our crew will find out where you're visiting from, where you're staying, where will you be having lunch today or dinner, and do you have a reservation? Oh, well, let's see what we can do to help you. And they'll often call and make people reservations, things like that. So we really pride ourselves on our customer service. And of course, you can't do that if you don't have enough staff to make it special. We also have to be by appointment. Our use permit requires us to be by appointment, which is not a difficult thing. You simply call and get a reservation, but being by appointment also allows us to give you a special experience because we don't have tour buses and hordes of people coming in. We have, you know, smaller groups and we can customize the experience. But we have 45 employees and I hope we don't get much bigger than that. But
that's a nice attitude. I like to hear that. And I'm sure your fans would like to hear that. It's nice you don't take buses. I can't imagine. And I know the buses come up here. I don't know how the hell they do it. But
well, the thing that comes up here that I don't know how they do it are the stretch limousines. You know, we have a t-shirt that says, I survived the drive to Pride. And I, every time a stretch limo comes up here, I want to give everybody in that car one of those t-shirts because I don't know how they do it, but they do.
Is there any reason why there are no restaurants on the mountains?
Well, I think that, you know, the properties on this mountain are all vineyards. They're all farms. We're all farmers up here. So I think it's probably a zoning issue. But when you have, you know, when you're in the business of making wine, you know, people often say, well, are you a restaurant? Can we have dinner there? While we have a dining room in our cave, it's mostly to fulfill people who have bid on auction lots and we'll make a nice dinner for six people in our cave or something. No, it's a permit issue. It's a zoning issue. And I think that the Valley Floor is a lovely destination on either side of the county line to have a wonderful meal. But I think the people who are in the business of making wine up here on the mountain are in the business of making wine up here on the mountain. And that's it.
Three winemakers in 20 years. Tell me about your current winemaker and how long has she been with you?
Well, our winemaker is Sally Johnson. She's been here for 3 years. She came to us from St. Francis on the Sonoma side, and we had a really interesting time interviewing for this position. We had some of the most famous winemakers in Napa and Sonoma County, and frankly from around the world, apply for this position. And it's a tough thing to interview for a new winemaker when you're a winery because, you know, that's like everything. We had a very rigorous interview process, and Sally revealed herself to be the candidate of choice. Bob Foley was our previous winemaker, and of course, he's very well known, and so he left some big shoes to fill. And Sally was the one, the production crew chose her. My brother is a scientist, and it all came down to her science and her knowledge. She's trained at UC Davis. She has a phenomenal track record. She's worked at wineries around the world, and she is very dedicated, serious scientist when it comes to making wine. So we feel really blessed, and she's a great team player. We feel really blessed to have her on board.
So you said the production crew chose her. So when she went through the process, obviously she interviews with you and your brother. Is she interviewing with somebody else beyond that?
Oh, yes. Whenever we hire anybody up here, no matter who it is, we go through a pretty rigorous, you know, 3 to 4 interview process. Candidates have to come back up this mountain several different times because they're going to be part of our family, and we're really close up here. When people come to work here, they tend never to leave, so, or at least not for, you know, a decade or more. So we all spend a lot of time together, and it's important that everybody's on the same philosophical page. So Sally spent time with Ramel Rivera, who's our associate winemaker, in our caves. Time with Steve in the cave, time with the tasting room staff, time with me, time doing a blind tasting of our wines just for the sole purpose of identifying each variety. And that was a really interesting thing. We talk about our Merlot being a big Cab Lovers Merlot. Well, every single one of these phenomenal winemaking palettes that came to interview here confused the Merlot with the Cabernet Sauvignon. They thought we were showing, because they were bagged in paper bags, they thought they were drinking Cab when they were drinking our Merlot. So that was kind of funny. Everyone said, oh no, is that going to make me not get the job? We were just curious in their palettes and everything like that. But Sally survived all the interviews, and we were just so pleased to offer her the position. Well, it's interesting. You know, we ask each applicant to bring a bottle of their best wine that they've ever made, in their opinion, and so we could open it and taste it and have them describe it and why did they think this was so special. And then, of course, we're taking mental notes. You know, how would this play into our program up here with our fruit that we have? And so it was a really interesting process, and I think it worked very well because Sally was hired, and the first thing she had to do was blend and bottle the 2005 Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon here. And so she had to come right in and do that, and it got a Wine Spectator Top 100 Wine of the World award. So she, right out of the block, she just took off running, and we haven't looked back since. She's just doing great.
You made the right decision.
Thank you. We think so.
Suzanne, tell me, what's your opinion? Corks versus screw caps?
Well, it really does depend who you talk to. For me personally, we know that there's something special about red wine aging in a bottle with a natural cork. You know, it just helps the aging process. There's also something very romantic about popping a real cork. And Synthetic corks are fine. They have their place, I guess. I think some of the more fragile white wine varieties like Viognier or some Chardonnays, you know, it helps with that. There's the intrigue of the new glass closure, which is kind of a sexy product. And, you know, that's all well and good. I don't know, for me personally, and we've talked about it here, we're traditionalists and we're going to stick with natural cork for the most part. Certainly for our red wine program. And I think, and anybody that decides otherwise or wants to go with synthetic corks, that's great. And they should certainly do what makes sense for their wines. But for us, we like the old-fashioned romance of natural cork.
What about cellaring your wine, specifically Merlot? You just released a brand new Merlot.
Yes, we released our 2007 Pride Merlot.
So tell me about cellaring that.
Well, one of the interesting things about the fruit up here at the winery, it produces wines that are bright, fruit-forward, very drinkable and approachable now. There's also enough acid in the wine where it will age very nicely and keep its fruit and evolve into, you know, a very complex, more European style with age, 10 years, 15 years, depending on the variety. And the big thing with cellaring wines and aging wines, as you know, Ray, is consistency and temperature. So as long as, you know, ideal cellar temperature, people debate this, 55 degrees, 58 degrees, 60 degrees. It doesn't really matter as long as it's constant year-round. So whatever your cellar is, if it's a closet, if it's under the bed in the downstairs guest room, wherever it is, as long as it's pretty consistent, the wines, anybody's wines will age nicely. For Pride wine specifically, again, wine critics always say, you know, 20 years, 30 years. But as my husband Stuart and I like to say, if you add 20 or 30 years to our ages, we might not be here to enjoy the wines, so we're going to open them and drink them now.
Is your husband in the business?
My husband is in the business. When we got married in 1985, he was already in the wine business. Again, mom and dad purchased this property in 1989. Our first vintage was 1991. And Stuart at that time was Schaefer Vineyards National Sales Manager. He was the first National Sales Manager for Schaefer Vineyards. He also was National Sales Manager for Chalone Vineyards and a lot of other wineries since then who have started. He helped get them on the map. So when mom and dad started Pride, started making wine, and we realized we needed to sell it nationally, Stuart was a shoe-in. He found Bob Foley for us through our New York distributor back in the early 90s, and he's an integral part of this winery. He is the winery's oldest employee, and of course, I'm totally a fan, so thank goodness. I think I picked a good one considering what our family business ended up being.
So Suzanne, tell me, you're the second generation owners of this winery, which wine to me is very much a family thing. It is with me and my own family. Where are you at with that?
Well, my brother Steve and I talk about that quite a bit. Our parents, Jim and Carolyn Pride, had their own careers, and at the age when they were about 50 years old, they bought this property to retire. And of course, being the entrepreneurs that they both are, well, sadly, Dad passed away in 2004, but that they were, and my mother still is, they were so excited about the potential of this property. So retirement went on the back burner, and lo and behold, they started growing grapes. Well, the grapes were here. They started farming the grapes properly on this old wreck of a vineyard and brought it back to life. And we're selling the fruit to, I can't say who it was, but it's a very famous international wine program here in the Napa Valley with one of the original founders of the Napa Valley. It's a very prestigious wine. And when Dad found out that the cab was going into that program, he said, what the heck? Let's just bottle it ourselves. So that's how Pride was born. So my brother Steve and I feel very fortunate that our names are on the paperwork for this generation. And we kind of feel like stewards of a museum. Curators of a museum, carrying this dream of our mom and dad forward for the enjoyment of generations to come. He has two boys. I have two girls. Someday our children will inherit their grandparents' ranch and winery, and hopefully someday their children will, and it'll just keep going into perpetuity. So we feel very proud. It's really an honor to carry forward our parents' vision.
I agree. Are any of the kids working here, involved in it yet?
Well, the boys are 11 and 13, and my girls are 23 and 21 and just graduating college or in college. And so actually my daughter Elizabeth is here while she's looking for a job in architecture. She's working in the tasting room, polishing wine glasses and washing windows and greeting guests and learning from the ground up the kind of quality and service that it takes to keep our winery being the best that it can be.
Suzanne, I believe we're going to be going outside, but I first want to say thanks very, very much for your time. This has been great.
Oh, thank you very much, Ray. It's a pleasure seeing you again.
Pride Mountain Wines can be found on the web at pridewines.com.